We got partway through 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 20, so that's what we want to read again and finish out the comments on that. Paul has been talking about the rights that he has as a Christian. He's been talking about paying preachers. He's been talking about things as far as evangelism. And those three subjects are still tied in with the rest of 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Looking at the entire verse, 1 Corinthians 9:20, he says, "And of the Jews I became as or like a Jew, that I might gain Jews. To them that are under law, as under law. Not being myself under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law." So here you have in verse 20, 1 Corinthians chapter 9, the final point being made. Paul said that he was not under the law. Now there's a manuscript variation. If you have the King James or you have the New King James, you'll not see part of what I read. But Paul is saying to the Corinthians, I have no interest in following the Old Testament law for justification. It's not needed to be in a right relationship with God. We've made that point repeatedly. If you're in the Sunday morning class, as far as Galatians, Paul knew that Christians live under the New Testament. Makes that point in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 2. James talked about the perfect law of liberty that we have in James chapter 1 and verse 25. So going back to the book of Galatians for just a second, said if you want to be under that system, if you want to be justified by the Old Testament law, you're fallen from grace. You're someone who has lost your salvation. So he certainly didn't want to put himself in that particular position. But he's going to make this point several times as we look through this chapter. He says that as he was dealing with the Jewish people, how did he want to live? How did he want to behave to help bring Jews to Christ?
Preach the gospel.
All right, he wanted to preach the gospel, and he wanted to do that if you're out, if you're in a society, for example, you think about people going to the beach, spring break. If you have people down at the beach, what are they expecting you to wear? All right, they're expecting some kind of swim attire. What happens if you show up in a parka? Well, they're going to think that you are nuts, right? You just don't wear that. Even if you walk down to the beach in jeans, are people probably going to think that's a little strange?
Yes.
It just is odd because you don't fit in. So Paul in this chapter is going to say, look, when I was with the Jews, I tried to fit in. Not that I wanted to follow their religion, especially for salvation or justification, but I did my best to live like the Jews. Then when I was over with the Gentiles, I lived as they did. So he was trying to be as flexible as far as things that were not doctrinal. He was also trying to be inflexible when it did involve matters of doctrine and moral. And that's the pattern that we want. As Christians, we should seek to be flexible when it comes to things that in our world God gives us liberty on so we can fit in well, so we can be accommodating to people, so we can get along, and that helps us use every legitimate means to advance the gospel of Christ, to get people to listen to it and to get people to obey it. I have more to say about that, but we'll stop and see if there's anything that springs into your mind at this moment. Adam?
When I used to go on Latin American mission trips, when you would like door knock, a lot of the Hispanic cultures, if they offered you something to eat or drink, it was extremely rude to decline. Mm-hmm. Even if you had a water bottle in your hand and they're offering you something to drink, you know, it was rude to not take that, like coffee or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, in a lot of places here, they may offer it, but it's more of like a feign of hospitality, like they offer it, but if you don't take it, they're like, okay.
And that's being sensitive to culture. I had it in Europe. I'm not a big fan of tea. Cold tea is a whole lot better for me than hot tea. I rarely drink hot tea unless I'm maybe sick. But in Europe, you're probably going to be served hot tea. And I knew that that was going to be socially unacceptable not to take the tea and not to drink at least one cup. Now, you do find that there's some cultures. France has been an illustration of this. What happens if you're a missionary? You want to be a good impression, and somebody pushes some alcohol your way. Well, are you going to blend in better if you drink it?
Probably.
Well, absolutely, because that's what everybody does. What happens if you decline it? What would the risk possibly be?
Well, maybe you could just explain your situation.
Well, you could. What would the risk, though, be? If you decline it, right, you have offended us. We brought out the best that we have. I remember one time when I was over in Russia, or maybe Ukraine, I don't remember which place that was, but I was offered alcohol, and I did exactly what Mom said. I said, look, you know, I appreciate that that's part of the culture. I appreciate you bringing out your finest and best. But as a Christian, that's just one of the things that I avoid. And to this day, I remember the lady saying, you must be a good husband because you don't drink. Alcohol was a big problem as far as women being abused by the husbands. So in that particular case, that was absolutely the right call. Had I accepted it, I don't know where that woman is spiritually now, if she's even alive or dead. But in that particular case, that made an impression on her. So sometimes that can be a fine line between blending in with the culture, and that's a good thing, blending in with the culture, and that being a bad thing. But you are exactly right. Anybody else before we move on a little further? Okay, if you've just joined us, 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 21. Paul says, to them that are without law, who do you think that refers to? The people without law. Gentiles. All right, that would be the Gentiles. He says, not being without law to God, but under law to Christ, that I might gain them that are under the law. These verses, starting with 20 and going down through verse 22, illustrate how Paul became all things to all men. And he says he did that so that he could excel in the area of evangelism. As Adam said, without law, that of course refers to the Gentiles. They were not under Moses' law. They could have become a proselyte and then tried to follow the law. When you look at that word, which is translated without law, that is an example of what we talked about before. You take a word, an English word, and you either add an A to the prefix at the beginning of it, or you maybe add un, and you take a word which, for example, means lawful. You add unto it, it means unlawful. So you change the word, and you change the word to a negative meaning. And here the idea means lawless. And it means that the people were outside the law, just like we read about in Romans chapter 2 and verse 14. It doesn't mean that they were outlaws. It simply means that they were not following Moses' law because they were not the object of Moses' law. That, of course, was given for the Jews. So Paul says, look, I'm over among the Jews, so how am I going to live concerning the law of Moses? When I'm among the Gentiles, am I going to follow Moses' law? I'm going to pay attention to the dietary restrictions. I'm going to observe the Sabbath. I'm going to be talking to people about circumcision. Was he following all the protocols? No. He was not interested in doing that. For what reason? All right, that's true. The Gentiles were not under that law, so he was not doing that. But why avoid all those laws when he's among the Gentiles? For a reason other than what Betty gave. Okay, I think that's also part of the answer. Anything else that we can add?
Those items don't resonate with
them. Yeah, going back to the beach illustration that I gave, if you're going to go down to the beach, you don't show up in the parka, you probably don't show up in jeans either. You're trying to fit in, so to speak, to the best of your ability, and that's what Paul was trying to do. Without law does not mean that Paul lived a lawless life. It does not mean that he was a godless man. It simply means that he was trying to blend in a way which was consistent with Scripture. One source made the point this way. Paul made himself like them out of mercy and compassion, not of craftiness and deceit. And that should be our job as well. You find people in life, they are not very accommodating. It is their way or it is the highway. You find some people who are just rough as far as dealing with them. Nobody likes to be around them. They're like sandpaper people. That was tough to get out. But they're just, you know, like an old corn cob. And nobody likes to be around them. Paul didn't want to be that way, and no Christian should want to be that way either. Don, to you.
Help me a little bit here.
Okay.
So those outside the law became one outside the law.
Yeah.
Now, that's in voice. But did he do anything, actual things that he did to show the people that he was under the law?
But remember, we're talking about the word law here in the sense of Moses' law. Not law in the sense of being a lawbreaker. That's not what he means by lawless. He's focused on the law of Moses. And he said, when I was a Gentile, I didn't pay attention to Moses' law. That wouldn't have made any sense because the Gentiles wouldn't have listened to it.
But if he's like a Jew and he doesn't do the things that Jews did, how did he convince them that he was under the law?
Okay, now remember, we start out here with the Gentiles. We've got two groups of people. We've got the Gentiles and the Jews. When Paul was over here with the Gentiles, he lived as the Gentiles as far as Moses' law. We're not going to pay attention to that. But when he goes over here and he's with the Jews, then he begins to pay some attention to what the Jews paid attention to. So it was, as a Christian, I have some flexibility here. I'm going to live as the Gentiles live to the fullest extent of my ability, and that could have involved a lot of things. if they were going to have idle meat served at the meal, Paul says, invite me over for supper. I'd be glad to come. If, you know, he would have to draw a line at some point, but I could potentially see Paul as a Christian if someone said, my child is going to go down and undergo some ceremony at the Gentile temple. Would you come down with me? If we were a Christian 2,000 years ago, what would you have said? You have your best friend. I'll give you a more modern illustration of that to make it a little more practical and a little easier to understand. Someone says, we're going to have the christening of my child. My child is going to be baptized by the Catholic priest. We'd like you to come. That's the modern equivalent for us. What would you do? What would you say? Would you go?
Yes.
Why?
Because it's my friend. I'm going to keep it that way.
Okay.
I mean, it's not that I would agree with what they're doing, but I don't think it would be worth making a big scene about it either.
Okay, Sherman was courageous enough to step out with an answer. Anybody want to go in a different direction or add to it? Marcia? Yeah, I think that's the other aspect of that, because if you go, you can really go with one of two attitudes, can't you? You can go with attitude number one, which would be what?
Support your friend.
Well, okay, let's add a little bit more to it. Support the friend and support the practice?
No.
Observation is not participation.
Yes, exactly right. You may go and you may observe. And you may say, we are so glad that you are concerned about your child growing up in a godly home. That gives you an opportunity to teach. The failure becomes really twofold. Number one, you could fail to deal with that in the right way. You could somehow participate in that, or you could encourage that or say, that's good. And that's a problem. Or the other aspect of failure would be you don't take some opportunity to teach. Now, you don't have to jump up right there. Because if you don't do that, if you fail to teach, guess what might happen 5 or 10 years down the road?
You thought it was okay.
Yes. You came, you never gave any indication that that was a problem or that that was, in your mind, objectionable based on Scripture. I assumed that it was okay. So the person is giving you a teachable moment. At some point, maybe not on that particular day, at that particular hour, but they have opened a door for you. And that needs to be a mental sticky note in our mind that at some point, this somehow needs some further attention. We need to address this. So at least in my mind, as I think about Paul, I can see him going to maybe some idol feasts or maybe some of the pagan festivals. You know, they were not going to engage in fornication. He would go to those kinds of places, obviously. But there could be some other things where he would go and be there and observe, but not, as we were told just a moment ago, to participate. So great point, Nick. Gary, did you have a thought there? Okay, anybody else? Adam, and then we'll go back to Sherman.
I had two thoughts. One is, you obviously, though, on one far spectrum of going and making it seem like it's okay, but you also don't want to be on the far other extreme where you're rudely say you're not coming, or whatever, or just don't show up, and then there's a little bit of confusion in that. Another thing I wanted to say is, like, you know, sometimes organizations that may or may not be specifically associated with a certain religious group may just be a collective of religious people coming together to do beneficial things. I think those are opportunities where, in the past, a lot of Churches of Christ have shied away from that because there's other religious organizations there, when it's still an opportunity to show that we are a benevolent people. And I think that's something that a lot of people need to keep in mind as well.
Excellent points. Let's go back and look at that first one for just a second, talk about it just a little bit more. One possible reaction when somebody says, for example, could you come to the baptism of our infant, those kinds of things, you can jump up and down and say, well, that's not taught in the Bible, and that's wrong. How far is that going to get you?
Not far.
That's not going to go very well. So you might actually communicate the truth to somebody, at least maybe get a sentence or two out, but that's not going to be very productive as far as helping save the person's soul. So if you want to decline, that's an option for you, but just do it politely, do it kindly. The other thing that you didn't tie into this, but it does relate, would be, for example, some anti-abortion things that involve people from various religious groups. It is possible to go and be a member of that organization at the same time you are not actually supporting any kind of false religion. So there are some ways where we can go out and be visible in some places. There are some things that we can go out and help with or support, and at the same time not give any indication that we support religious error, but hopefully find some opportunities to teach. So two great points as well. Sherman, back to you.
I was just following up with what you said a little bit ago. To me, there's a time and a place.
Yes. Yeah. Anybody else? Okay, the Gentiles. If Paul had gone over there and started talking to them about things which have been taken out of the way, circumcision, Sabbath keeping, all the holy days, you think they would have been interested in that stuff? No. There was no reason for that. The observance of special dietary laws, all those kinds of things. So if Paul had tried to follow any of the Jewish practices among the Gentiles, he would have appeared to be a very odd duck. That would have hindered his work. But he didn't want to do that. So he used different approaches for the Jews and the Gentiles. You kind of see this demonstrated a little bit back in the book of Acts. I'm going to go back to Acts chapter 17 for just a little bit. Start with what we have at the beginning of the chapter, Acts chapter 17, verses 1 through 3, and then I'll skip down to verses 22, 23, and 24. He says, starting in verse 17:1, Luke, "Now when they had passed through Amphipolis and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica, where there was a synagogue of the Jews." So that's who we're talking about in verse 1. "And Paul, as his custom was, went in unto them and reasoned for three Sabbath days from the Scriptures, opening and alleging that it behooved the Christ to suffer and to rise again from the dead. And this Jesus, whom he said, I proclaim unto you, is the Christ." Now, as a Christian, did Paul think that the Sabbath was a day of worship? No. Did he think that that was a special day or a holy day? No. But how does he spend a Saturday? He's not out there making tents. He's doing what? He goes to people who are involved with a religion that's no longer valid. And he shows up at their place of worship. Well, that's interesting. Now, we don't typically see that in our day and time. I have known of at least one congregation that took Sunday nights to fan out and go to different religious groups in hopes of reaching people. You know, I guess you could argue that strategy from two different perspectives, one good and one bad. But typically, when we think about visiting other religious groups, a lot of times that's not first and foremost in our minds. But that would be one way to possibly have some impact on a person that is religious. You need to see what we do, or at least watch a service online. I have people from time to time send me information that I, from a scriptural perspective, would not agree with. But do I just, you know, click the delete button and say, all right, I'm not going to listen to that because that guy's a false teacher? No. I mean, if the person took the time to send it to me, what do you think that he or she hopes for me to do?
Respond.
Yeah, at least listen to it, right? Check this out. Because generally when people do that, they're thinking that this is favorable information. That's how Paul dealt with the Jews. Then as you move down a little deeper, a little more deeply into that chapter, verses 22 through 24, let's find 22 there. 22 says, "And Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus and said, ye men of Athens, in all things I perceive that ye are very religious. For as I passed along and observed the objects of your worship, I found an altar with this inscription, to an unknown God." Did Paul take the time to check out the pagan statues?
Yeah.
Now, what's that tell you about this guy? You know, he could have had a real flippant idea. You guys just worship these idols. They're nothing. They're just stone. They're wood. They're carvings. There's no life in them. But he said, I stopped by to check it out. And I know you got a bunch of them in town. He knew a little something about their faith. And then, as we talked about before, you can't let it stay there. You have to go ahead and have that sometimes difficult conversation. He says, "What therefore you worship in ignorance, this I set forth unto you. The God that made the world and all things therein, he, being Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands." And then he goes on and talks about that a little bit more. So Paul used what he had seen to his advantage. He used that as an opportunity to teach people. And that's one of the things that will make us better when it comes to the year of evangelism. We don't have to know everything. We don't have to know a lot. but we can be sensitive to those opportunities to talk to people where they're bringing us something to look at or see, something to hear, or maybe we've looked at something, we've heard something, and that gives us an opportunity to speak. Anything that you want to add or ask before we say a little bit more? Okay. At the end of the verse, that's again 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 21, Paul talked about gaining those who were without law. And that, of course, is the Old Testament law, and he's talking about the Gentiles here. One source noted that when Paul preached to the Jews, he started with the Old Testament patriarchs, but when he preached to the Gentiles, he began with the God of creation. Stated another way, Paul didn't have one stock sermon. There's some people in life, well, let's back up a little bit on that. When the world is trying to get something accomplished, for example, if they're trying to sell you a product, do they have multiple strategies oftentimes? Or do they just have one strategy from 1942 that they just keep recycling and that's all they use?
Multiple.
Yeah. And how would we illustrate that?
Well, they just change their advertisements.
Okay, so they freshen things up, right? Have you ever seen a model of a vehicle that they run it for a long time? I mean, you see that sometimes with cars or maybe trucks or vans. They get a model that people like, and it just keeps being produced year after year, maybe 10 years or more. But what do? If you look at the vehicle from the first year that it was produced to the last year, it's basically the same. They haven't changed the engine. The transmission is still the same. And maybe 90% of it is still the same. But what did they do to that vehicle over that 10-year period?
They tweaked it.
Yeah. Or there's a refresh. I think that's still the term that's used in the automobile industry. They will go ahead and, you know, maybe change a dial or two here, or maybe change the dash cluster, or steering wheel's a little thicker, a little thinner. Change the fabrics and so forth, but it is basically the same detail. Why? Because they know they have a winning combination. But people do like to see some small changes. Can we do that with the gospel? Can we freshen it up a little bit? Jewel Miller film strips work great for a while. CDs work great for a while. So we've got the same message. It simply gets repackaged sometimes from time to time, and that's a good thing, and that's what Paul's talking about here. Marcia, did you have a point?
I was
going to
bring up the Jewel Miller film strips.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know how many thousands of people were taught that way. Now, if you showed up today with the Jewel Miller film strips, I still remember people would drag out an old phonograph. It was on record for a while. And you would get your record player out there, and, you know, hopefully the needle worked and everything, and then you got a little screen that you pull out, and you got the old projector. If you remember the slides, or I think there was even film in like a 35-millimeter canister for a while. And there was a little film projector. You just kind of have to twist the dial and go frame by frame by frame. If people saw that today, they would say that's more antiquated than the rotary dial telephones. I mean, it would be really old technology for people. But, I mean, it worked. Well, today we're having to kind of move into a different area. We've got the internet, and we've got all kinds of other things that we can use to teach people. So that's what we see as far as Jesus as well as Paul. They did use different techniques. When you think of, for example, about Nicodemus, and this can be true even depending on a person's academic background. If you have someone who is well-educated and you're trying to talk to them about the gospel, might you use the same approach that you would use with someone who's from a third world country?
You have to be able to speak their language.
Well, you would have. To do that, you may have someone who's gone through the educational process and they've been exposed to a lot of atheistic professors, so they're thinking, I don't have any faith or confidence in God. I'm not even sure that a supreme being exists. And this idea that the Bible is the book from God, the idea that the Bible is the only religious document that will get us to heaven, those might be concepts that the person who has the PhD, perhaps plus, when it comes to education, would really struggle with. But if you're talking to the person on the island who's barely scraping by, you think they're probably going to be interested in that stuff? Not so much. They're thinking, I believe in God. I just need, you know, a little insight to figure out what the Bible says. So a lot of people in third world countries have faith in the Bible. They just need a little guidance. So different approaches for different people. You'll see that too, depending on where people live. If you're in a college town, you're probably going to have a lot of preaching that is directed in a certain way. If you're dealing in the Midwest, you're going to focus on some stuff. You're dealing with some people out in the coast, that's probably going to change the emphasis of the teaching as well. So people, in many ways, are the same, but also in many ways, they are different. Sherman?
That's what Jesus did with his parables. You know, he explained them in a way that they understood it. And that's what we can do today.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. And when you look at Jesus, the people that he dealt with, the common man on the street, was talked to somewhat differently than people like the scribes, the Pharisees, and the lawyers. So ultimately, it was the same message. We're trying to get you to heaven, but we're focused on some different things. And that's what Paul did. That's also what we see in Acts chapter 17. When Nicodemus and Jesus had a conversation, the Lord was talking about the living water. And then, of course, when he comes to, the new birth. And then when he talks to the Samaritan woman, there is a discussion there about living water. So our job is to hopefully reach as many souls as possible and do that in a lot of different ways. I will kind of add this in here. I know anybody here of what House to House is doing as far as Rob Whitaker and the evangelistic effort. You seen any of that on Facebook maybe? Okay, House to House has a family that's kind of going throughout the brotherhood. A lot of congregations right now are getting the evangelistic training that they're doing, and it's been helpful in a lot of places. That's coming to LaGrange. I think it is September 6th, 7th, and 8th. We're headed out on vacation on the 9th, so I'm hopefully going to be able to at least hit the Friday and Saturday of that. If you want to improve possibly or add another tool to your spiritual toolbox when it comes to teaching people, put that down. September 6th and 7th at LaGrange. They do have some good things to say. Not every congregation has been helped by it. Where the kids were, they brought them in, and for their demographic, for their area, they went through it, and they said, this is just not something that's going to work well here, but some other congregations have been able to use that with a lot of success. So it's right in our neck of the woods, and that's definitely worth hearing and seeing if we can benefit from that. So we do have different things that we've used here. We've got the Lord Let Me Go, the Revelation Study, mailed out house to house. We've done door knocking and other things, and there is no magic bullet when it comes to evangelism, but we do want to be open to a lot of different methods. Final point in verse 21 is Paul saying we are not being without law to God. That is, again, Paul was not under the Old Testament law, just as people are not today. And here he specifically says that he was under law to Christ. That's an important point for us as well. When he talks about being under law, he means legal, subject to law, obedient to the law, under legal obligation to Christ. When you start looking at this point, you find it expressed in a lot of different ways in the New Testament. The Christian is not under, and we've seen this several times in Galatians, we're not under a law for justification. If we were, what would be true? If we were justified by law, then what would be required of us? We would have to be people who followed the law perfectly. We would never have any sin. Well, all of us miss that mark. Paul talks about that at least twice in Romans chapter 3. So that system don't work. And God has given us a different system, and that is a system where there is law, but we don't have to keep that law perfectly to be justified. That law of Christ is called the doctrine of God, the doctrine of Christ. It's the gospel of God. It is the gospel of the kingdom. It's the perfect law of liberty, the truth, the word of God, the word of life, or even the traditions that were given to the Thessalonians. The pattern of sound words, the word of grace, is called the law of Christ in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 2. Oftentimes, so when we look at life, when it comes to what we have here, just as Joshua was warned in Joshua chapter 1 about verse 7, don't go to the left, don't go to the right. When it comes to law, people oftentimes fall in one ditch or the other when it comes to extremes, the left ditch or the right ditch. When it comes to law, what's one extreme? All right, there is that, you know, there is virtually little grace. It is law, law, law. You've got to do this, this, and this, and if you don't, you're going to go to hell. It is very negative preaching, which makes people feel awful, and there is virtually no hope. But on the other hand, there's another extreme, and what's the other extreme?
Grace for all.
All right, grace for all. It's pretty much God doesn't have any rules, or they are so loose that just about everybody's going to make it to heaven. Maybe there's even hope for Hitler and Saddam. Well, that doesn't make a lot of sense, but the other extreme doesn't make a lot of sense. So it is in between those two things where God says, I have this beautiful system where there is grace. It is mixed with law, not for justification. And sometimes people get that mixed up. The Romans did. They thought that they could do anything that they wanted because there was God's grace. And that's simply not true. There's enough law there. It's kind of like America in a lot of ways. Maybe not the best illustration as things currently stand, but do we have a lot of freedom? I mean, when compared to other places, we have a ton of freedom. But at the same time, we can't go out and do whatever we want, or at least we shouldn't be able to based on the laws. And we kind of have a similar thing in the spiritual realm. Okay, I'm ready for verse 22, unless there's anything that you want to discuss. Anybody? Let's go there. He says, to the weak, I became weak. Why? That I might gain the weak. I am become all things to all men that I may by all means save some. Now, Paul, back there in 2021, he was talking about Jews and Gentiles. Those are the people, two different classes of people that he wanted to save. But now he kind of moves into another area, and he talks about the people who were weak. We spoke previously about them back in 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 7, 9, and 10. These are Christians who are bothered by certain practices. It's not a moral issue. It is not a doctrinal issue. This is a conscience issue. Sometimes a person has a conscience issue because they are a new Christian. Or maybe they are a Christian that has not been taught very well, and they could be someone who has a very sensitive conscience, or maybe something similar. You do have in the previous chapter an illustration of weak Christians, and these were the brethren who struggled with what? Paul said you've got some strong who can do what, and you've got some weak who can't. Anybody remember the discussion in 1 Corinthians 8? What was the subject? The eating of the idol meat. There were some Christians who thought that they could go down to the market and buy the idol meat, bring it home. It was cheaper, it was better food, and that was not a problem, but not everybody had that particular view. Now for us, we kind of have to think a little bit, because our culture is different than what it was back in Corinth, but there are some parallels. The best parallel I think that I've ever come up with would be holidays. We just went through Easter. I got a call after Easter from somebody in a particular congregation, and the person said, I want to talk to you for a minute. And I said, okay. They had someone who was a speaker, and the person got up and talked about Easter from a religious perspective. Well, that upset some folks, including the eldership. And I was asked, what should we do? We've kind of got an angry beehive. Well, it's a little late to put, you know, things back together. You know, once Humpty Dumpty has fallen, you know, it's kind of difficult to pick him back up. So when you have holidays, how should you treat them? How should you deal with them from a religious standpoint? Yeah, so let's take that good answer and let's develop it from a couple of perspectives. What happens if you're a Bible class teacher? And you let's use Easter since that was recent. How do you handle that as a Bible class teacher? You probably have, let's say that you've got a kid, a class of 12 children. In a class with that many kids, do you think that there are probably going to be some children who celebrate Easter?
Might be.
I think that's pretty likely. Is there at least a reasonable chance that some children are not going to be celebrating Easter? There's probably that too. So as a Bible class teacher, how do you handle that? What do you do?
It's your opportunity to teach them how to grow their own.
Okay.
Right. I mean, just like Christmas time, we don't celebrate the birth of Jesus, but we can use that opportunity with everyone thinking about the birth of Jesus.
Okay. It is a teachable moment. That's for sure. That kind of goes back to what we were talking about before. You have been given a door. You've been given an opening. So use that. What happens if it's younger kids and the teacher wants to pass out a treat? How do you handle that? Some kids are going to take it up, be excited about that. Some other kids don't. What do you do as a Bible class teacher?
Pass out a treat.
Well, what about... Okay, but what about for the kids that are coming from a family where that's not done or that's offensive? How do you handle that?
You might know that beforehand.
Yes. There you hopefully know enough about your students that that's something, and again, somebody might say that's unethical. But we do have Paul. He's dealing with people differently. When I was with the Jews, I did it this way. When I was with the Gentiles, I did it this way. So it may be that a child is given that discreetly, and just look, not everybody in the class agrees on this. We know that you are on this side of the issue versus this side of the issue. So, you know, please take this home. Don't make a big deal of it at services. There are ways to deal with that where we do respect both sides of the fence. What happens if we're going to teach a Bible class or preach a sermon on that day? We also kind of have to walk both sides of the line, don't we? I mean, it gives you a teachable moment to use some information about that day. We can, you know, point people to things related to Christ, his resurrection, but we don't look at Easter as the day that he was raised from the dead. We don't look at Christmas as the... date of his birth, those kinds of things. So it is a fine line. We're trying to be sensitive. And there, as I said, there may be some people who look at that and they're critical of us. They say, you're playing both sides of the fence. Not really. We're trying to be respectful of this side, and we're trying to be respectful of this side. Not everybody's going to be happy, but this seems to be consistent with how Paul lived his life. When it comes to questions that are not moral, they're not doctrinal, on those things, I mean, it is this way, it is black and white, and this is where we need to be. But on these other areas, we can show some kindness and liberality and some and consideration to people in both groups. Adam, back to you. Yeah, they're great. I'm glad you brought that up.
I've done presided over the table before. I've, you know, led singing, I've preached, but none of those things had I ever done on an actual Easter Sunday. And presiding over the Lord's table on an Easter, to me, was probably the most difficult thing that I've ever done as far as the worship, just because you don't know exactly how get that across. Obviously, what we're doing up there is a celebration and a remembrance of what he did for us in his death, burial, and resurrection, which is what the whole world views as Easter. So there is some things that are the same, but the reason for us doing it at that moment is different than what the whole world views.
If I had a Best Comment of the Month award, I'd give it to you. That's really good, because I was looking at this simply from the standpoint of being a preacher. But you're right. When you have a holiday like that, it could be Christmas or Easter. Those are probably going to be the two prominent ones. When somebody is up there and that day happens to fall on a Sunday, that happens from time to time when it comes to Christmas. Song Leader has that same challenge. People are thinking about the holiday and perhaps thinking about some songs. Maybe they make some comments. The person who prays as well is also perhaps put in that situation. And we, if we're participating in the service in that day in a way where we're actually saying something, we need to remember that we do have probably brethren who are going to be on both sides of the fence. So I'm not saying watch our words, but I am saying that we do want to be mindful that we do have strong and weak members. That, of course, being a way to describe people who are either for something or they're opposed to something, and we do want to try to be respectful of both. Because if we don't, we can create an unnecessary hornet's nest. And one congregation is dealing with that right now. Gary.
You touched on it a little bit, because I was a song leader on Easter morning.
I didn't have your mind.
Okay. Well, it was Easter, as according to the calendar, and I know there are some people that like that, so I did pick a couple of songs specifically that emphasize a whole lot of he's risen, but I didn't base the entire song list off of that. You know, I picked songs that would also go with the lesson, and I picked songs for the invitation.
Yeah.
You know, so I was trying to be cognizant of both sides as well, because I don't want to completely ignore any song about resurrection just to prove that Easter isn't whatever, but you know, it's still, they're good songs, and we don't only sing them on Easter, we sing them every Sunday.
Yeah. So it's a balanced approach, and that's why I said before, kind of like with the legalism and with the grace, when you end up there in the middle, that's always, generally speaking, a really good place to be and the right place to be. So very good. Adam?
And you also have to always keep in mind that there are visitors that
sure
may have no kind of idea about Christianity or like Church of Christ. They just saw it was Easter, and they try to always go to a church only on Easter or Christmas or whatever, and they're here. So, you know, you don't want to, like, glaze over something, but you also don't want to completely, like, cow out of their thoughts and beliefs on what the service for the day.
It is difficult, and that's another great point when it comes to visitors. We have people, and if you talk to folks before Easter comes, they'll perhaps ask you if they know that you are a religious person. Does your congregation have anything special planned for Easter or Christmas? And if you say no, you usually get some strange looks, because that's not what they're expecting. We had some years ago, family is no longer here, but they had some family members come, and the family members were expecting an Easter service. I made some remarks before a lesson. The lesson that day wasn't particularly focused on Christ's resurrection, and I made some general comments that we don't have that in the Bible. You know, we're going to yada, yada, yada. And, you know, they were basically offended. Never wanted to come back. So it is difficult sometimes. You can't always get it quite right. But there are some people who have some really strong feelings when it comes to this, and we do need to recognize both sides of the fence. Don, to you.
I don't know if I get this right or not, but when Paul told the two apostles that they said these guys are doing things in your name, he says, leave them alone. If they're with me, they're not against me.
That was Jesus, but yes.
There's a coalition between those trying to say, you know, Easter is not on this day, or Christmas is not on this day. We can prove it to you in the Bible. Should we just, what you're saying, I believe, is leave it alone. Because they're believing in Christ, they're going through that way. So is there any correlation between what Jesus said to his apostles?
I think a stronger way, and maybe ultimately a better way, would be what we find back here in verse 22. Paul says, I became all things to all men. When he says that, he uses a perfect tense. And what he means by that, I became all things to all men, he is saying, again, excluding things related to morals and doctrine. I became as flexible. I became as pliable. I did everything in my power to get along with people, not promote a fight, and to make sure that people saw me as a good guy instead of a bad guy. Now, going back to the holidays for just a second, the kinds of things that you mentioned would probably put you more in the bad guy category than the good guy category. When somebody comes along and starts talking about Easter, we have a couple of options. We can either offer a response. We've talked about what an improper response would be. We don't want to support any error, so that would be problematic. But we can say, you know, we're glad that people are thinking about the resurrection of Christ when it comes to this day. We can, I think, sidestep some of the things that people say and still stay on the side of truth. Or we might not say anything, or we might change the subject. They might think that that's a little strange. But we're trying to deal with people as kindly and as gently as we can, to give the least offensive response that we can when we're put into a situation where people are talking about something that's religious and religiously wrong.
I agree with what you're talking about. Well, that doesn't mean to say that we would step right in and say, well, you know what you're talking about. You think it's Easter is this day, or Christmas is this day. You know, that's not the point. The point was, hey, you know, we don't know when those two dates are.
Yeah.
But we celebrate those two dates. We celebrate more than just those dates. We celebrate more than that.
Yeah, I think that's an example of trying to deal with a question, and it would be like somebody coming at you with a knife. You know, you're just trying to kind of step aside and avoid the knife, rather than that direct confrontation. There's some things that we can say which will just kind of, you know, push the arm with the knife out of the way a little bit. And we can be kind and polite and do that and then move on. So, again, Paul says, I become all things to all men. There were certainly times where he did that, and we can too, because ultimately we're trying to save the souls of people. He did everything that he possibly can to reach people, and that's what we want to do as well. Anybody else? Marcia, to you.